Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 18th of August. This hour of the program, The Second Wave, Return of the Militias, a special report from the Southern Poverty Law Center, which was released this month. The SPLC nonprofit organization combats hate, intolerance, and discrimination through education and litigation. And a summary of the report would be that the stresses of a poor economy and a liberal administration led by a black president are among the causes for the recent rise in militia groups in this country. Also, conspiracy theories about a secret Mexican plan to reclaim the Southwest, which is growing amid public debate about illegal immigration. A special agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives told the researchers this is the most growth that he's seen in more than a decade. All it's lacking is a spark. It's reminiscent of what was seen in the 90s, right-wing militias, people ideologically against paying taxes, and sovereign citizens popping up in large numbers. Heidi Byrick is with us this hour. Heidi is Director of Research and Special Projects for the Southern Poverty Law Center, helps run this premier operation in America tracking the domestic radical right. Heidi also writes feature articles for their quarterly magazine, Intelligence Report, and she has been with the Southern Poverty Law Center for 9 years, coming from academia, where she specialized in the study of white nationalism and neo-fascism in Europe and North America. She's co-author of Neo-Confederacy, a Critical Introduction, which explores the neo-Confederate movement. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Heidi. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hello, Heidi. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I appreciate being invited on.
Yeah, our great pleasure. Let's start with guns, if you would, please, because I am really disturbed. And now the AP has been reporting in the last day that a dozen people carrying guns, including an AR-15 assault rifle, have been mingling among protesters outside some of these health care events. Can you tell me, is this part of some kind of right-wing movement, or are these people associated with some of the groups that this report highlights?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously in the militia world, this is a big deal, gun rights and access to weapons and wanting to be against any kind of gun regulations at all. But the truth is there has been a true almost hysteria in the gun rights world over the last several months, to the point where ammunition sales have literally sold out in lots of Western states. And it's part of the trend that we're talking about in our report, The Second Wave, this real fear on the right that something is coming. They're not exactly sure what, but they obviously feel that they need to be heavily armed to deal with it. And, yeah, so they're showing up in front of Obama events with serious weapons.
And this something that is coming is what? Health care reform? Are they worried that Obama is black? What is it?
That is, of course, the crux of the issue. I'm not sure. What we're having is a confluence of people who believe in lots of different kinds of conspiracy theories, all sort of becoming very upset at one time. I mean, we have everything from straight-up racists who do not like the fact that an African-American is president. We have militia types and people who claim to be constitutionalists who are concerned about the fact that that politics has drifted to the left with the recent elections. We have real conspiracy nuts who believe everything from the fact that the president was not born in the United States, is somehow some sort of Manchurian candidate in charge of the government, to people who believe conspiracies about immigrants coming into the United States and destroying the country, invading the country. It's like a radical right kind of freak out, just a complete fear of, in some way, of nefarious things happening. And it's not as though they have anything to put their finger on it. You know, they can't point to something, but apparently they have some kind of, you know, it's like an existential crisis.
Mm-hmm. And Heidi, the report also says, and let's spend a few minutes on this, the remarkable aspect of the current anti-government movement is the extent to which it has gained support from elected officials and mainstream media outlets.
That is right. And that's probably the most frightening thing about this. I mean, in the 1990s, when you had a lot of conspiracy theories, militias on the uptick and growing, you didn't have so much people who represent, or what should represent, the mainstream voicing or speaking to those people. Today we have Lou Dobbs on CNN effectively endorsing the birther concept before he backed down on that later. We have people like Glenn Beck saying that it's possible that the government is creating concentration camps to round up individuals and put them in them. And this means that we've got mainstream figures spouting things that are basically conspiracy theories and not true, and ginning up this kind of dissent from the right and frightening these people, right? I mean, they're watching Fox News. They assume it's a mainstream outlet. You've got a major commentator telling you that the government's going to come and round you up and put you in camps. This is real scary stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then you've got people like Sarah Palin, former vice presidential candidate, talking about death panels and constantly talking about big government and how you need to fear big government.
Well, I mean, I think the death panel thing is sort of the most direct statement, right? I mean, you're saying people are going to come and kill you.
Right.
And the conspiracies about Mexican immigrants invading are the same thing, right? These people are coming to take you out. So, you know, this is part of what is making these people so paranoid.
Mm-hmm. So that's why we're carrying our guns at events, because we're going to take you out first, or what is it?
A lot of just talk about the fact that you need to have your weapons, because the government is either going to come and get you or take them away from you, and there may be a day when you need to engage in some kind of revolutionary activity to stop this out-of-control government. So you need to be well-armed, right? These people are preparing themselves for violence against the government.
Right. Tell me about the differences between militia movements in the 1990s, what sparked some of those, and what's going on right now.
Well, I would say in the 1990s, the militia movement was much more on the fringes of society, meaning, you know, we had an explosion in the number of militias at that time. We had a situation in which the far right was very upset with the Clinton presidency, very, very upset. And I'm not talking about conservatives, right? I'm talking further to the right than that. Concerned about a liberal drift in the government, concerned that some kind of like hippie generation was taking over. There were a lot of fears that Clinton was going to use ATF agents and others to take away people's guns. And then there were a series of incidents at Ruby Ridge and Waco that caused extreme paranoia in militia circles. But it was definitely a more fringe period because you didn't have mainstream folks really voicing the kinds of conspiracies that these people were about. And it was an extremely violent period. We have documented between 1995 and 2005, 1995 being when the Oklahoma City bombing occurred, 60 domestic terrorist events, most of them involving militia-type folks, most of them foiled, luckily, by law enforcement. But that's a lot of domestic terrorism. Today, it's a little different. We have so-called mainstream folks voicing some of these concerns. We have the fact that our economy has been in the tank, and that makes the situation more ripe for problems. And we have, you know, an African-American president who's already been targeted by people who have these views. I mean, people seem to forget that we've had like 6 or 7 really nasty incidents of domestic terrorism just in the last 6 months. So it's coming back.
Right. And remind us of what those were. There have been killings of police officers and the horrendous incident at the Holocaust Museum. What have those incidents been?
Right. We had in April Richard Poplawski in Pittsburgh, who was afraid that the government was going to come take his guns from him, that Obama was directing this in some way. He was also a racist. He gunned down 3 cops in his front yard. We had a person who was interested in militias in Florida kill 2 sheriff's deputies, I believe. We had, of course, the Holocaust denial shooting. We had a situation in Maine that's maybe the scariest of all and has been talked about very little, in which a guy named James Cummings, who was shot by his wife — he was a wife beater, she killed him when he was attacking her — when the cops came to the residence, they found that he had the makings, and this is in their words, of a dirty bomb in his home in Maine. And this is a guy who was paranoid about Obama, had all these kind of extreme anti-government feelings. So, and we had Keith Luke, who went on a rape and murder spree in Brockton, Massachusetts, the night of the inauguration. He was upset about Obama, and he carved a swastika in his head later. These are serious incidents.
How are people keeping track of these movements and these people? Is this the purview of the FBI?
I think the Department of Homeland Security has a part of it. Sort of an intelligence analyst section that does that. Also, the FBI has intel analysts who do this. Excuse me. And if people remember, The Department of Homeland Security actually put out a report a few months ago that was brutally savaged by conservatives, but actually predicted that this violence would be on the uptick. And, you know, and so here we sit with that going on.
Mm-hmm. And then, as you say, the press, and I just think that it's unbelievable that you can have people on the air and saying some of these things and fueling all of this. I mean, they just shouldn't be on the air.
Well, I mean, our feeling on that, especially we'd written to CNN about Lou Dobbs, is we just don't think somebody who's basically presenting lies, in this case about Obama's, you know, where he was born, should be on a major cable network, right? I mean, this is not an issue of free speech. Lou Dobbs can say whatever he wants, wherever he wants. This is about whether or not CNN wants to have him say those things on their airwaves. And we think it's a really serious issue. I mean, people who are kind of starting to go a little bit off the rails, see somebody who's from the mainstream telling them things like FEMA's going to put you in a concentration camp, and it's sort of a license for violence.
Yeah, sure it is. And what response did you get?
We have got nothing from CNN, not one word. We got attacked by Lou Dobbs several times, and so far the truth is that Jonathan Klein, who is in charge of the U.S. part of that network, has stood behind Dobbs. He's just completely stood behind him.
Does it take, I was noticing reading yesterday, that Glenn Beck has had several of his major advertisers withdraw?
Well, it seems to me that that might, in the end, be the better tactic, right? Color of Change has run a campaign asking its supporters to write to the advertisers, right, to pull their advertising off of Glenn Beck, and it's been very successful. And maybe money talks. You know, I don't know at the end of the day. I mean, Beck's still on Fox, and nothing's happened to him, and he's still saying things like Obama's a racist, you know, really outrageous things. But, you know, maybe at the end that'll have some impact.
Right. And how do people find out about these movements? Is this all an internet thing going on, Heidi?
Well, there is a large aspect to this that is internet-based. Almost all of these groups, whether it's militias or hate groups, which we also track, they tend to want to have an internet presence because, of course, they want people to get their message right and to join up with them. But there's also an aspect that's more underground. There are private email lists where you have to be vetted to get on. There is literature that these groups produce that, you know, you have to get on mailing lists to be involved in. And then when you hit sort of the highest levels where you might go and engage in paramilitary training with an organization or, say, some kind of border watch activity down in southern Arizona, there's more vetting to get involved. And some of the groups are more public, want the public to engage with them, and some of the others are more private.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about this, and I'm wondering if it's linked to those anti-tax protests we saw a few months ago. This sovereign citizen movement, they're claiming that they're not subject to income taxes. What do they mean? They're sovereign citizens. Who are these people?
Yeah, that's probably the most bizarre part of the radical right, is the sovereign citizens movement. What they say is that they are original citizens under the original Constitution, meaning they're not 14th Amendment citizens. And the 14th Amendment is, of course, where slaves were given citizenship rights in the United States. They consider themselves to be some different, more special kind of American citizen who doesn't have the same obligations as these 14th Amendment types and others. And part of that is the idea that they don't have to pay taxes. They can't be regulated by the government, meaning they can't be forced, I'm using their language, to have Social Security numbers or driver's licenses. They have special sovereign, meaning themselves. They are sovereign in themselves status. It's very complicated, but it leads to people doing things like refusing to get birth certificates, refusing to put licenses on their cars, and a lot of these people have been engaged in a lot of violence over the years. In many instances, having killed law enforcement officers who were trying to make them follow the real law, what I would say is the real law that they don't believe in.
Yeah. Isn't it hard to believe that all of this exists? It strikes you as unbelievable.
Well, I mean, the sovereign citizens movement is such a threat that there is a new center being created to coordinate law enforcement agencies to get these threats together. And I don't remember exactly what the number was that was in our report, but there was something like over 1,000 threats to judges and other officials.
Yes, yes.
From sovereign citizen folks over the last year. That is really amazing, and that is very similar to what happened in the 1990s when judges were getting liens put against their property, they were getting harassed. we had situations in which grand juries, I put that in quotes, were formed by sovereign citizens to indict people, right? I mean, this is a completely fake legal system that they created. And it was really scary. And what's been happening in the last few months is we've had these kinds of grand juries called by sovereign citizens to indict Obama. So, you know, that we're having a revival of things that were very, very bad in the 1990s.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Heidi, and we'll start taking them in just one moment. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. Heidi Beirich is our guest, Director of Research and Special Projects for the Southern Poverty Law Center. We're talking about their just-released report, The Second Wave, Return of the Militias. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program, we've been doing a series of programs on healthcare reform, mostly looking at other countries, France and Canada and Great Britain. This hour, we'll be looking at the kind of healthcare that members of Congress enjoy and how they got this and if it should be a model for everyone. That frequently comes up and we don't have detailed discussions of what is it? How did they get it? We'll talk about that this second hour of our show. We go to phone calls now for Heidi, 800-486-8655. The number, Jean from Wauwatosa. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My concern is about the weaponry that is at these events. My understanding is the Secret Service can take these weapons away from people, that they're authority supersedes any state or federal laws, because I'm extra concerned about, obviously, Mr. President, as well as if they're carrying something strapped to their leg, couldn't any person could just take that and start shooting randomly in the crowd, as we know happens at high schools and everything else. Can't they expand their circle of this Secret Service? Can't they expand their circle of authority to these events and say, we're not going to allow this, and send a clear message that is not anti-NRA or it's anti-Second Amendment. It's concern for the safety of the people.
Well, I think the Secret Service has taken pretty forceful action. I mean, it depends on the state. Where the most recent event where a bunch of people showed up with weapons was in Phoenix, Arizona, where you can open carry guns. And I know that the Secret Service did push sort of some people further away from where Obama was speaking to try to defuse the situation. I'm sure they have to be sensitive to whatever the local legal regime might be. I will say this. I know that the Secret Service is very concerned about Obama. He's had more threats made against him than any other candidate or in history. In fact, the Secret Service put protection on Obama earlier in the campaign than they'd ever done for anybody else. And as most people are aware, there have already been two serious assassination plots against Obama, one involving white supremacists during the Democratic National Convention, and another involving two skinheads, one from Kentucky, who wanted to assassinate him not long after, just before, I think, the election occurred. So, you know, it's a serious matter.
Thanks for the call. What do you do about it, Heidi? How do you lessen this kind of threat?
Well, I think at the end of the day, this is very much a law enforcement issue, meaning, you know, one of the things we've been doing here is providing information on threats that we get into our blog and when we run across them to law enforcement. But they are really the ones who are going to have to provide this protection. Citizens can be aware about what's happening, and we want people to have public awareness about hate groups and militias and whatnot. But these are pretty dangerous people, and it's going to require law enforcement to handle them.
Yeah. Thanks, Gene, for the call. Adam from Park Falls. Hi.
Oh, I'd like to make a few points, if I might. You know, our history of presidential assassination and attempted assassination, at least in the 60s and the 70s, has always come from the left. Lee Harvey Oswald was a committed Soviet-style communist, and Squeaky Frome, who was just let out of jail for trying to assassinate President Ford, was a member of the Free Love and Drugs Generation, a member of the Charlie Manson family. But, you know, getting back to what's going on here, when President Obama campaigned for president, he made all kinds of outlandish promises to the left that he was going to seriously interfere with the legal right of ordinary Americans to own firearms. And ordinary Americans who do own firearms, or whoever wanted to own a firearm, have taken that seriously. And so they have single-handedly been leading to an upsurge in the American economy to the extent that they have the economic power to do that. And then after Obama was elected, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down the Heller case that said that the Second Amendment actually is an individual right of ordinary American citizens to own firearms, and not as, you know, some sort of government rights to have the National Guard. So look, President Obama has been completely reversed on this issue.
What do you think, Adam, of people bringing these weapons to town hall meetings on health care?
Well, I would never dream of doing such a thing myself. But then I don't live in these western states where they have this kind of culture where it's an acceptable thing to just walk down the street with a .45 automatic, you know, in a holster. Nobody pays any attention to this and doesn't bother anybody at all. So it's a completely different culture than the state of Wisconsin. If I saw this in Arizona, I would probably just smile and say, well, that's just the way they are here.
Ooh, I sure wouldn't smile. Heidi?
Yeah, well, let me take on both of Adam's points. One, in terms of assassinations from the left, the two he pointed out were, of course, definitely assassination attempts from the left. I don't know what the history of assassins going after American presidents was. I mean, obviously, John Wilkes Booth was about as right-wing as you can get, defending the Confederacy. The fact of the matter is that Obama's faced two attempts from the right, and that's why the Secret Service is concerned. Now, on the matter of guns, the thing that's interesting about this is Obama has basically said nothing about firearms. Only Attorney General Eric Holder talked about the problem of gun trafficking across the southern border. It's not even been on Obama's agenda, and Adam was absolutely right about the Supreme Court ruling and so forth. So to be freaked out that you're going to lose your weapons when the new president has really said nothing about it, the Supreme Court has just ruled, we'll see how it fleshes out, that you have an individual right, makes it all the more bizarre to me that you'd be stockpiling weapons. It seems like you should be very secure right now.
Right. You write in the report about 2 months before the election last fall, firearms manufacturers joining forces to promote NRA membership in a national campaign that was titled Prepare for the Storm in 2008.
Well, I mean, this once again shows this anxiety coming from the sector, right? They're, whether it's to get more support for groups like the NRA, or it's a real fear in this case with this political campaign that something is going to come from this new scary leftist black president, you know, I don't know. But all I can say is that he's never said a thing about firearms. It's just not true. But the anxiety, once again, the bad economy, the shift to the left in politics, an African-American president, all those things are causing these kinds of fears and reactions and driving people to go to a town hall meeting with a serious weapon. That's what's behind all this.
Thanks for the call, Adam. We go next to Brad from Nina. Hi, Brad.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to offer my perspective. I'm originally from the West, lived in Wisconsin about 15 years, and I grew up right next to the Utah-Idaho border in a very small town that predominantly Mormon people, and the Mormon people, I find from experience, have kind of a distrust of the United States government. I think a lot of it's based on the Utah War, different events that occurred in the history of the development of that group. And I have, in my own family, had experiences with family members who would stockpile weapons, stockpile military equipment that they could buy. They kind of have like this belief that the as well as the second coming of Christ comes, then they have to defend the country, they have to defend each other, that kind of thing. And it scared the crap out of me, so that's one of the reasons I moved to Wisconsin.
Oh my gosh. Heidi.
Well, I mean, what he's describing, what you're describing is actually, what Brad's describing is something that is what we've talked about. We talked about in the report. We've had a whole series of law enforcement busts of people stockpiling in extreme numbers. I mean, there was one case, I forget which state it was in, where when the law enforcement officials showed up, they went through like a secret door in a bathroom that led to a bunker that led to like five or six different rooms with piles and piles of weapons, plus in the case of this person, I think it was a sovereign citizen type, the ability to create weapons that are very, very dangerous. So the fact that we're seeing more and more of the stockpiling, of course, it's frightening.
Thank you, Brad, for your call. Let's go next to Jim from Milwaukee. Hello, Jim.
Hi.
Hi.
There are three things I think people might look at. One is that we have to understand how people come to their process of thinking and then try to reply to it. And two books on that, Tom Hartman, Cracking the Code, and George Lakoff's latest book, The Political Mind, I think would be good for people to look at. In terms of Lou Dobbs and some of the things like this, both locally and nationally, I think we have to boycott sponsors of programs that where they're coming up with either really crackpot stuff on the air or where it's all right-wing all the time. And that means people got to get on the phone or send out letters to sponsors and tell them that we're not going to endorse the product if there isn't some balance and fairness in what they're presenting. And finally, with the whack job groups, I don't think that other than law enforcement, there's much we can do with them. But with people that you can reason with, I think you can use humor, perhaps, as an inducement. For example, if I was writing a country western song about the Republican approach, how they'd like to portray Democrats on health care, I'd say, write a song that says, let's pull a plug on grandma and kill her through and through. Pull a plug on grandma, nothing else will do. Pull a plug on grandma, make sure she is through. Pull the plug on grandma and cook her up for stew.
Oh, Jim!
And it's just a tongue-in-cheek.
Right, I understand.
But it's just to give people a sense of how idiotic and foolish what they're proposing is in the first place.
Heidi.
Well, I mean, I wish humor was all it would take, Jim. I mean, you know, I've run into these people a lot, and they are so convinced that the really false things that they believe are true that it's just shocking. I mean, in the wake of the release of this report, the second wave, last week, we probably got 500 enraged email comments from people saying, you know, darn it, you know, Obama's definitely not a citizen of this country, or you evil people, you're bringing in the New World Order. And it was like you could hear the kinds of things Dobbs and Beck and Hannity and Rush have been saying out of their voices, and they really believe it. I mean, they've been sucked into this world where, you know, being rounded up by the government is a real thing, and it's really unfortunate.
So then it would be virtually impossible to dissuade them of their kind of thinking?
Well, I mean, obviously we have words, right? We were just enraging them. I think it's hard to talk to somebody who believes in a conspiracy. I mean, think about the JFK conspiracies. By definition, it's something that isn't rooted in fact. So it's, you know, it's hard to address. I mean, one of our ideas here is to always to try to bring the truth to situations.
Right.
But if somebody isn't engaging with the truth, you know, it's very hard to deal with. I mean, we had a whole set of conspiracies earlier in the 2000s about the attacks on 9/11,
yes.
Right? And that it was either the Israelis or George Bush did it.
Right.
In fact, one of the top truthers, as they called those folks, is now a birther. And it's just, it's very hard to talk to these people about this.
Oh, really? I didn't know one of the top.
Yeah, Phil Burke, he actually comes from the left. Most of the birthers are from the right, but he's a main player in these conspiracies, and he came basically out of the left wing and transferred from, you know, 9/11 plots being somehow, you know, manipulated to now this stuff with Obama.
Thanks, Jim, for your call. Let's go next to Eric from Madison. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I guess I'll start out. I'm not a nuclear physicist or a grad student, but I will say that I guess what I'd like to comment on is, you know, our right to carry arms were founded, or the Constitution was founded, and the right to carry arms was for, you know, to protect ourselves from a totalitarian type of government. Well, if you think that you're going to protect yourself from spy satellites and when all the local law enforcement agencies are, you know, carrying automatic weapons and listening devices, yeah, it's just crazy to think that you'd ever be able to protect yourself from the government, which I believe is out of control. You know, our we're now conducting military operations on U.S. citizens and different groups. And
how are we? What are we doing? What are we doing? How's the military conducting operations on U.S. citizens?
For example, like what they had on Democracy Now! Yesterday with Amy Goodman and the group in Olympia, Washington, and how the military infiltrated their, I forget what the name of their activist organization was, but infiltrated a spy in there for 2 years, you know, conducting operations on them. You know, that's just wrong, and there's no accountability for it. It just goes on. The news media is so biased. They don't report. Any of the mainstream media doesn't. They're all the same, for one thing. If you go to ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, whatever, they're all broadcasting the exact same thing.
All right, Heidi.
Well, I think what you're talking about was the, I don't remember if it was U.S. military, if it was FBI, that infiltrated some peace groups. And I just want to call attention to the fact that this was under Bush, right? This is not under Obama. And while Bush was in power, you didn't see anybody from the right who was concerned about an out-of-control government complaining about any of that kind of activity. They weren't complaining about other ways that the Bush administration violated civil liberties. For God's sake, they weren't even upset about the fact that citizens could be declared enemy combatants. The anger and fear of the government has only come in the wake of its move to the left, and I think that's significant.
Yeah, it's significant. And explain to me why that's probably the case, we know.
Well, I mean, I think the truth is that conservatives of the ilk that I'm talking about, not in general, you know, the radical right, it's not really a concern in general for civil liberties. It's just a concern for their personal civil liberties. And so if the government of George Bush that came from the right was, you know, stripping, you know, peace activists of their rights in some way, that didn't bother them. They felt like their gun rights were secure, and they didn't really care what was happening maybe to some, you know, lefty peace activists in Washington state. And now they feel, in their paranoia, feel like this government that's moved to the left, that it's, you know, I don't know if they think it's going to be payback in some way, or if they just think that leftists are, if they really believe their rhetoric, that they're communists or socialists or totalitarian, and that they're going to come in there and they're going to do something to them.
Mm-hmm. And yet it's hard to, I know we're not dealing with rational thinking here, but it's hard to it's not like we have a socialist government here. It's even hard in many ways to classify either Bill Clinton or Barack Obama as a leftist.
Well, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
First of all, the socialist and the communist is insane.
Right.
I mean, there are no communists. I mean, I'm North Korea, and they have, you know, some private enterprise. So, I mean, that's just a ridiculous thing to say. And what is the fear of socialism in the way they say? I mean, I agree with you, Obama and Bill Clinton. It's not like they're, you know, wildly to the left. And you already live in our country, certain things are socialized. I mean, we're all socialist in the sense of Medicare, right?
Yes.
Whether you like it or not. I mean, and it's funny, at these town hall meetings, right, a lot of the people who are very upset are people who are actually recipients of big government health care. So anyways, these kinds of charges, I mean, when Glenn Beck screams about the president being a communist or a Nazi or whatever it is, he's not saying it in the sense that he really knows what that ideology means. He just means he's evil and bad, right?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Eric. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our guest this hour is Heidi Beirich. She is Director of Research and Special Projects for the Southern Poverty Law Center. For those of you who are not familiar with this organization, it is this country's premier operation in tracking the domestic radical right. She also writes feature articles for their quarterly magazine, Intelligence Report, and we're talking about their just-released report last week on the second wave, Return of the Militias. We don't have any lines open right now. We do have an email which you can use, and that's talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We've been doing a series of programs on healthcare reform on Tuesdays at 10, and today we continue that series. Most of the other programs have looked at how other countries deal with healthcare. This next hour, we will be talking about the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, enjoyed by members of Congress and to full-time permanent civilian employees and qualified retirees of the United States government. So we'll look at their benefits the second hour. And we're doing actually a program, a forum on healthcare from all angles, and that will be September 16 at Frederick. So call us for more information. Back to your phone calls, 800-486-8655, and we go to Wayne from Holman next. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
Hi, and good morning to the guest. I guess I come from a little different perspective. I'm a little concerned as to the direction of this conversation. I think to suggest that the people that go to these health forums and raise, I think, legitimate questions aren't necessarily hard right-wing, beer-guzzling, pistol-packing folks. I think there's some genuine concern regarding H.R. 3200 as an example.
I agree, but do you show up with a semi-automatic weapon to protest it? What's that all about?
No, I don't, but I'm, you know, here we go again. WPR singles out one guy. I saw the pistol that he was carrying, a revolver on his side.
No, it's not one, though, Wayne.
I mean, you guys, you didn't talk about the conservative that was beaten to a pulp by some union folks, African-American, at some of these get-togethers. You don't talk about the hard left. Is WPR ever going to have a show talking about the hard left in America? No, it's always chasing after conservatives. And I'm getting irritated with it. You guys got to be a little more fair and balanced. I think maybe I'm wrong.
We're talking about a report on the return of the militias, and I think it's a significant problem in the United States, and if you can show me a report that looks at left-wing militias or whatever you want to call them, we'd be happy to talk about it. But I think this is a significant issue in our country right now, and I don't think you can put conservative liberal labels on it. I think we're talking about threats here, Heidi.
Yeah, I mean, let me just say with Wayne, of course some of the people showing up at the town halls have legitimate concerns.
Sure they do.
You know, I mean, obviously. But this stuff is stepping over the bounds. You don't say death to Obama, hold a sign saying death to Obama and suggest that his wife and kids should be killed in front of a town hall meeting. And, you know, unfortunately, this is a movement that's coming from the right, whether you like it or not. And it's, you know, to insinuate somehow that we have to find a left-wing militia to counterbalance out a right-wing militia, it makes no sense. There is no such thing. I mean, there is no sort of hard left in the United States anymore. I mean, this isn't the era of the 60s with, you know, the Weathermen or something like that. And the fact of the matter is this kind of rhetoric, this kind of violence, it is coming from the right, and it has to be recognized. And I think sensible conservatives are not threatened by the fact that that's the case. I mean, it's just, it's a matter of facts, right? They would want to distance themselves from those folks.
I agree with you, and it's disconcerting, I think, when I kind of sense that everybody's being painted with the same brush. You know, MoveOn.org advertised a book and a movie on how to assassinate George W. Bush. I didn't hear an outrage about that sort of thing from you folks on the left.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Are you familiar with that, Heidi? I've never heard of such a thing.
Oh,
absolutely. Well, then you got to get up to speed on some of MoveOn.org's garbage that they're putting out. It's not that long ago. In fact, it was in the third year of his last term that stuff came out. So if I can research it for you, and I'll try to email it to you.
Okay,
it's
Wayne.
Not something that isn't out there.
All right. Yeah. You send it to me. I'd be happy to see it. Thanks very much for the call, Wayne. And it is, that's the problem with part of this, and it drives me crazy because even those so-called left mainstream media frames all of this debate. We're engaged in a serious discussion about health care in this country. There are millions of people who don't have health insurance. There are people who have lost their life savings. There are people who are sick who can't get health care or insurance for their health care. And instead of having incredible number of important discussions that are serious at these town hall meetings, you know, and here I am, I'm guilty of it myself. We're talking about guns. We're talking about people, you know, who have crazy ideas about things. We can disagree on this, but for gall darn sake, let's do it in a serious fashion and give it the seriousness that this issue deserves.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Kathleen. Obviously, it's one of the most important issues there could possibly be, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, from my personal perspective, we've got a healthcare crisis that's got to be dealt with. And it's unfortunate in a way that all these extremists are drawing the debate away from.
Right. They're derailing the debate that's a legitimate debate.
Well, I mean, and part of it's intentional, right? We do know that there are certain groups out there who have been ginning up sort of the Tea Party folks to go to these events. ginning up others to show up who have extreme positions. They're bringing people from other states, and it's a tactic that is unfortunately derailing the discussion.
Let's go to Bill from Superior next. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I'm just asking if you could speak to what extent you believe that right-wing AM radio is responsible for at least reinforcing this goofy phenomenon.
Well, it's not just, yes, it is responsible. I mean, people like Rush Limbaugh have a very wide reach. Hannity does. I'm not sure if Dobbs is FM or AM, but the radio programs tend to be more extreme than what these folks say when they're on television. And that was also true in the 90s. A lot of extreme anti-government discussion occurred on shortwave and AM, and it's now, over time, transitioned itself even further into the mainstream onto TV. And a lot of folks that come from these extreme anti-government movements, they get most of their information from radio. So it's a fundamental aspect of this movement.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill, for the call. Let's go next to Stephen from Wisconsin Rapids. Hello, Stephen.
Hello. I'm kind of wondering if we could take it in a direction, look at militia, kind of putting the extremists aside. I'm personally not a gun owner, and I kind of consider myself a pacifist, but recently I had a debate with somebody on Facebook about the militia, and they kind of equated the militia with the National Guard, and I said that wasn't the original idea of the militia, and I said, you know, perhaps it'd be better to have a militia in this country than a standing army, because I think the standing army drives us into more, you know, militarism, and we probably wouldn't be in the wars that we're in currently if we had a militia instead of a standing army. I kind of backed up this point with, I believe Switzerland has something pretty much like a militia, and they also have very liberal gun laws. Most people own guns in Switzerland. I guess that's my question.
Yeah, I can't really speak to that. I'm sorry.
Speaking of militias, though, tell me about these militia training events. The report talks about huge numbers are available on YouTube videos. What are these, and where are they taking place, and are they more dominant in one part of the country than another?
They're relatively popular in the Midwest, but that's not to say that they aren't popping up all over the country. We've got a militia here in Alabama, for example. I would say it's sort of more Midwestern. Ohio has always been a big spot for militias, even going back to the 1990s, and is again now. And another place where we're seeing an interesting thing occur is in the Arizona border regions, where groups that were militantly anti-immigrant, who were, for example, running border watch events, rounding up immigrants crossing the border, undocumented migrants, many times with guns, have now shifted into the more paramilitary exercises, questioning whether Obama has a right to be president. They're talking about sovereign citizens events. So we're seeing the shift from nativism to the patriot movement in the border regions, which is significant and something new. We didn't really have a vicious anti-immigrant movement in the 1990s. That has developed in the United States since 2000. And so that's now melding into the militia world.
Hmm. And it's probably only going to heat up because there hasn't been a lot of action on the immigrant issue.
I think that's right. And I think if Obama does go ahead and introduce some kind of comprehensive immigration reform in 2010, as he's promised, you'll have an explosion from these folks. I mean, they will be they'll be even more angry.
Is there a danger, do you think, Heidi, in publicizing a report like you've done on this, in even talking about this? Is it best to ignore these groups?
This is a question I get all the time, a lot of the time from journalists, right, who are struggling with this issue. And, you know, the idea that maybe these people are so fringe that we shouldn't highlight them, it gives them a bigger voice. And I have to say no. I think ignoring a problem is only going to make it worse. And we have to know that extremists exist. We have to know what their ideas are. We have to try to counter them with facts. We have to let law enforcement know where these folks are. In fact, the department that I work in, the Intelligence Project, was created in the early 80s because the FBI had stopped paying attention to Klan activity in the South, which led to violence and a lynching down in Mobile. And it's like we have to know about this stuff as we just that's our position.
Mm-hmm. Rick from Milwaukee, hello.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the show. I just wanted to call in and suggest that a lot of the gun-toting protesters at President Obama's meetings and a lot of the rhetoric that we're hearing coming out of the right. It strikes me that that level of rhetoric and the inability to engage in even spirited debate, but descending into that kind of rhetoric, is coming from a place of profound anger. And my sense is that just like our personal relationships, when they break down and become intense finger-pointing, that anger is usually rooted somewhere other than the debate facilitating the argument. And my personal belief is that the sound bites that Rush Limbaugh and others are feeding these angry folks is helping them express anger related to the economy, to their jobs, to their fears about their retirement, to their health care fears, to the shift to the left, and so forth. And that in some ways, trying to tackle that anger on its explicit debate, if it's originating somewhere else, actually might miss the point.
And so how would you tackle what the anger is about?
Well, I think that I might try to, I don't know, I think I'd go to what do relationship psychologists do in those situations where the breakdown in a personal relationship is gotten to such an angry, resentful point that you're no longer really dealing with the root issues, but you're dealing with kind of feel-good mechanisms for expressing it because, you know, I mean, I just think we got to figure out, you know, what's really motivating these people, because I am not from the South, but I spend a significant amount of time in Texas, and I hear people that I respect saying things that I just know in my heart. I know them well enough to know that they don't believe it. I'm not trying to denigrate them as smart people with a point of view. I'm saying I know they don't believe that rhetoric, but they say it anyways after listening to, say, a Rush Limbaugh show, and I go, where is that coming from? They're not really angry about that issue. They're angry.
Mm. Heidi.
I think the caller makes an interesting point. I think what I was trying to say earlier in the program about this anxiety and fear that he captured, the things that are behind that, right? The bad economy, the retirement, I would say, changing demographics. Those are all things that are leading to this. Just, I mean, I do think the anger is an expression, a version of fear. I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know how to speak to this except to bring up the facts. But, I mean, I think the caller makes a good point.
Mm-hmm. And thanks for the call. Mike is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Do you think that because we've changed from a factory economy to a service economy, and the role of males as protector and provider for the family has been diminished, males have become, the male role has certainly become more feminized, that this aggressive way is a way for males to, again, protect their families and have a high stature amongst themselves as heroes and as providers and protectors? Isn't this make a good sense?
Oh, we are moving into psychology here, Heidi, are we?
I know. I was going to say I'm not a sociologist, so I don't know. I mean, what I can say is that I don't think anybody would say anything different, that these movements are sort of aggressively male, right, in terms of characteristics. And, you know, I remember in the early 90s that there was a lot of discussion before Newt Gingrich and the Republicans took over the House about the angry white male. And there are some aspects of that to this movement, but I am not a sociologist and I'm not a psychologist.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Tom from Madison. Hi.
Good morning. Excellent program, as per usual. My question is where does the Constitution lie on all of the speech and broadcasting over the airways? And isn't the onus upon us as consumers, if you will, if we don't like what they're saying, to turn the channel? I mean, what our forefathers have been labeled by their government at the time, and you know, my wife and I are active shooters. We are, you know, we're conservative on some things, we're liberal on some things. But, you know, I remember as a young man, a young kid in school, a social studies teacher indicating that, you know, freedom of speech is such a thing and freedom to demonstrate is such a thing that the point that Jesse Jackson, for example, makes would be best demonstrated by him actually leading a Nazi rally or a Klan rally. Now, don't cross over into violence, but these people have a right to speak. I mean, they have a right, you know, to carry in the states where they are, you know, carrying. We don't agree with it, but they have a right to do this. Again, you cannot hurt anybody.
Heidi.
Well, I mean, look, freedom of speech is an extremely strong protection in the United States, which is a great thing about this country. And so this is, when you're talking about sort of the networks and whatnot, like I said earlier, it's not a discussion of freedom of speech. These people have every right to say what they want. They have every right to protest. The Law Center would never want to close down a Klan protest or anything like that. But when it comes to CNN and Fox News and these broadcasters, that's not about freedom of speech. That is a decision by them to air this particular speech versus some other kind of speech. I mean, I don't have a right to tell CNN they've got to put me on for an hour a day. That's a business decision. And so I agree with changing the channel. I agree with people who write to the network because they don't like something. They're using their freedom of speech to criticize what's on those networks.
Heidi, thank you so much for being with us. People can get the report online, I'm sure, splcenter.org.
That's right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Heidi, for being with us. Heidi Byrick, our guest this hour, Director of Research and Special Projects for the Southern Poverty Law Center. And again, you can get the entire report, The Second Wave, Return of the Militias, at their website, splcenter.org. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thank you, John Treader, for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee. And thank you, everybody, for listening and for calling. We have news coming up in a moment from National Public Radio, and we'll return with more Tuesday conversation on healthcare. First, a few announcements and the news.